This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We start now with the sixth day. That's chapter 1, verse 24. Perek Aleph, Posuk Chof Dalet. Vayomer Elokim, and Hashem said, Toitze ha'oretz nefesh chayo lemino, let the earth bring out. Living life according to its kinds, vehemo, cattle, veremes, insects, v'chay so'eretz lemino, and the wild animals according to their kinds, according to its kind, Vayehi chen, and it was so. Vayas Elokim es chayas ha'oretz lemino, and Hashem made the wild animals of the earth according to its kind. Ve'es ha'behemo lemino, and the cattle according to its kind. Ve'es kol remes ha'adomo leminehu, and all the creepy crawly things, all the insects according to their kind. Vayar Elokim ki tov, and Hashem saw that it was good. A few interesting points here already. The one is that when a little earlier in verse 20 in Posuk Chof, when there is life created in the water, it says Yishrutzu Hamayim Sheretz Nefesh Chayo, let the water swarm with life. When the plants were created, that was earlier, it says Tad Shei Ha'oretz, let the earth sprout. In both cases there's a connection between the producer and the product. The earth sprouting, the sprouts still remain attached to the earth. They're not free from the earth. When the sea produces life, sea life, it remains in the water. Yishrutzu hamayim, it remains in the water. Here for the first time, the word used is toitse, that let the earth cast out, let it throw life out, and that life becomes liberated from the earth. So we're getting more and more freedom from earthiness created. In the beginning, when vegetation was created, it was attached to the earth. It could only be nourished, it could only live by continued attachment to the earth. In the next phase, we had sea life created, and that too had to remain attached to the sea. It had to remain completely surrounded by the sea. There's no way that the sea life can survive if it isn't completely enveloped by the ocean. Not so in the case of animal life. Animal life, we have a freedom already. We have toitze ha'oretz, let the earth produce something which is capable of an independent existence, which is not attached to the earth. So animal life is the beginning of that liberation from oretz, from the earth itself. And that which is created is nefesh chayo lemino, is a living animal. Behemo, remes, cattle, creepy things, insects, wild animals. The difference between behemo and chayo, there are two different views. The Ramban's view is that the behemo, the cattle, are the carnivorous animals, and the chayo are the animals that later became carnivorous. But the other meaning, which is the way that it's taken normally in halacha when we use these two terms, is the behemo is the domesticated animal and the chayo is the wild animal. So the chayo includes not only the cat family, for example, and the dog family, but it also includes the wild deer. So kudu and impala and buffalo and all these things are chayo. Behema are the things that one can domesticate: cows, oxen, sheep, and so on. And Hirsch points out that the word behema comes from the word bamo, which is an elevation, a stage, a platform. And he learns that the creation of the behema is to create a platform for man to liberate himself. Because if there were not behemas, if there were not domesticated animals, then man would have to toil and labor with an extreme amount of physical effort. We would have to pull our own plows. We would have to do all the physical labor would have to be done by ourselves. So that the domestic animals, the cattle of those days, played the same part that technology plays today, except technology goes that much further. It liberates man from the need to have to exert a great deal of physical labor in the achievement of his sustenance. And the purpose of that, of course, is so that he can use his mind while he's doing it. If a man would have to pull a plow himself, he wouldn't be so free to be using his mind while he's doing it. If a man simply has to walk behind an ox pulling a plow, while he's doing it and keeping an eye on the ox, he can have his mind on other things as well. He can be philosophizing, he can be learning, he can be thinking and developing himself at the same time. And so the behema from that word bamo becomes a very important elevation for man to achieve his spiritual and intellectual needs, for him to stand on the back of the animal and thereby to achieve his spiritual needs. Now, we've also got to understand the relationship, and we'll see that a little bit further, between the animal in the human being. Well, perhaps let's go a little bit further before we come to that. Vayas Elohim es chayas oretz lemino, and Hashem made the animals according to their types. Vesa behemo lemino, the cattle, vemesa adom lemineu. And the Medrash asks that it's interesting where it says what God intended to make, it includes more than that He actually made. In verse 24 it says there was the chayo, there was the behemo, there was the remes, there was the chaysoi eretz. There were four of them. In verse 25 it says chayos oretz, the behemo, and the remes. There are only three. There's one missing. Nefesh chayo lemino is missing. And the Medrash says something quite fascinating on that. Rebbe Omer, Elu HaShedim. These are the Shedim. Shedim are commonly translated as ghosts. And they do exist. We do believe in them. I'm sorry to tell you. And what are they? What are these Shedim? What are these ghosts? Shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Nishmoson. God formed their spiritual forms. He formed their souls. Uvo livrois es gufon, and he was about to create their bodies, v'kidesh ha-shabbos, and it was shkia time, Shabbos came in. It was too late, the loy bron, so he didn't finish the job. So you have all these souls floating around that don't have bodies. That was the shedim. Now why on earth would God have done that? Why would God have started something that he couldn't complete and leave this kind of a mess around? Says the Medrash, l'lamedecho derech eretz min ha-shedim. The shedim, these ghosts, and they're sometimes negative forces, sometimes they can be positive forces, but generally they're negative forces, they're not nice things around. But they have a function, and they teach us derech eretz. What's the derech eretz? She'im yiyye b'yad odom chefetz toiv v'margilis. If a person has a very valuable object or a precious stone, erev Shabbos im chashecho, erev Shabbos, he's walking or he's driving, and he realizes he's not going to make it in time. He's got to get out of his car and he's got to walk. But in his pocket, he's got his life savings tied up in a diamond. He's got to understand, Omrim lo hashlech bimcho. We say to him, drop the diamond. Nothing you can do. Shemi she'omar v'hoyoho ilom. Even Hashem himself, Osuk bivriyoso shel ilom, was busy creating the world. Uvoro is nishmoson, uvoro libro is gufon, and he had created their souls already and was about to create their bodies. V'kidei Shabbos, and Shabbos came in, v'loi bra'on, and he didn't finish the job. And so the role of these shadim, of these incomplete creatures, is to teach us that sometimes you don't finish something. And Shabbos coming in is a lesson. There are all sorts of things we learn from Shabbos, but one of the important things we learn from Shabbos is exactly that moment of Erev Shabbos, the moment that Shabbos comes in, and you say, oh, but there's a whole lot of stuff that I haven't finished. So you haven't finished. Who says it has to be finished? We sometimes get obsessed with completing things. And yes, it's important also not to leave things incomplete as far as we can. But lo yalecha ha-melocha ligmo v'yato rosha lihibotel mimeno. That while on the one hand you're not permitted not to be active, don't think you have to finish everything. And the same applies with a life. Sometimes a life is terminated when a person's in the middle of something and people say, oh, and he was nearly finished, or he was in the middle of it. Who says you have to finish? Who says everything has to be completed and finished? Even Hashem was satisfied with an element of incompletion in his creation. It doesn't have to be complete. There is such a thing as stopping. It's more important to know when to stop. And knowing when to stop is not governed by when the job is finished. There's another dynamic that determines when you stop. And if people would know that, they would live a lot, they would be a lot more healthy, and a lot of the problems that we suffer from today wouldn't take place. Whatever it is, you're sitting in your office, and you've got something that you need to finish, but it's time for a shir, it's time for mincha, it's time for ma'ariv. What determines whether you finish working or not, whether you continue what you're doing? Is it the need to complete? Was the fact that there's another dynamic which is superimposed over the need to complete. That which determines when you stop a job of work is not the completion of the job of work. One has to be sensitive to a whole lot of other things that are going on at the same time. One might be in the middle of something and somebody needs a chesed from you. You don't have to say, let me finish what I'm doing, then I'll attend to you. Not necessarily. You've got to make a value decision. Sometimes you do have to finish what you're doing, and sometimes you don't have to finish what you're doing. Sometimes the interruption, and we call it an interruption, but it isn't. Was Shabbos an interruption? It wasn't an interruption. Shabbos was an indication to Hashem that it's time to finish. And it doesn't matter that there's certain things that are incomplete. And so it is with so many things that we do. We assume that anything that interferes in a process before the process is complete, we assume that it's an interference. And we try and push off the interference so that we can complete the process. And what we're saying here is that that's not always so, and that Shabbos comes to teach us. And Mincha and Ma'ariv comes to teach us. And a Seder of Learning comes to teach us. And something that we need to remember and focus on all the time, that what determines when a job needs to be interrupted, what determines when a process needs to be interrupted, is not just the completion of that process. There are other dynamics which are sometimes more important than the completion of the process. And an individual has to have the ability to make those value judgments and to weigh up and to make a decision. So it could say, I don't complete it. There's something more important that's come up. A lot of people destroy themselves because they're unable to change course. They destroy themselves because they're unable to say, it doesn't matter if I don't finish this. The opportunity I've got now is much greater. So leave this alone. How many people have lost all their money on the stock exchange because they won't sell their shares? And it's so foolish. The share's going down. Sell it, he says, but it's lower than it was when I bought it. But it's going to be even lower tomorrow. And he says, but then I'll wait till it goes up. Why wait till it goes up? Sell it and buy something that's going up. Why sit with it? But we become so attached to something that we've started that we want to see it through until what we consider, sometimes you can't sit it out that long and sometimes they never come up again. And people are so attached, they don't want to stop, they don't want to finish. A person's involved in a particular course or career and there's an opportunity for a career change. He says, no, but you know, I've put so much into this and I've studied so long for this and I've done so much. So what? What does it matter? There's an opportunity that's greater than what you're doing at the moment. What difference does it make what you've done? Right now you have a choice and you have an opportunity. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam comes, Erev Shabbos, the choice is, do I continue making Shadim or do I have Shabbos? Shabbos is greater than making Shadim. Forget the Shadim and have a Shabbos. And that's how it is with so many things that we need to do, is to be able to evaluate at each point whether what we're doing is the most productive thing, or we sometimes have to abandon or abort, as the computer people say, abort what we're doing, because we have the opportunity right now to be doing something better, something more productive than that which we're doing. And that's the lesson of the Shadim. Vayar Elokim ki tov, and Hashem saw it was good, even though the shadim were half complete. Hashem was quite satisfied because the moral lesson that the shadim represent was worth the fact that they're incomplete. And then starts the fascinating period of civilization, which is the introduction of man into the picture. Vayomer Elokim, and Hashem said, Naase Odom Betzalmeinu Kidmuseinu. Let us make man in our form and in our likeness. Veyirdu bidgas hayom uva'if hashomayim uva'behemo v'chol ha'oretz v'chol ha'remes ha'remes ha'oretz. And let him rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heaven and the cattle, all the animals of the earth. The Rashi on Naase Odom is important. And Rashi says Naase Odom, there are two Rashis on that. The second Rashi on Naase Odom, Afal pi sheloi siya'uhu biyetzirosoi. Who's God talking to? God says, let us make man. Who's he talking to? He's talking to the angels. Says Rashi, but they didn't help him make man. They weren't involved in the creation. V'yesh mokum leminim lirdois, and agnostics could in fact criticize, they could use this as a basis to say that there's more than one God. Idolaters can say, you see, there's more than one force. God had to ask permission. There must be some superior force that even governs God. So God was taking an enormous risk by putting this word into the Torah, where it says, and God said, let us make man. That, says Rashi, is an enormous risk. Nevertheless, Hashem takes the risk. Why? Lo nimno, Hashem didn't hold himself back. Hakosov mila lelamedecho derech eretz umidas anova, to teach derech eretz and anova, sheyehe hagodol nimlach v'noitel rishus minakotem. That the older person, the greater person, the more senior person, asks permission from the junior person. That even a person who has full authority involves other people in the process. Even though at the end of the day, if they don't agree, you'll still go ahead. It doesn't matter. Usually they will agree. And they feel much more involved. They feel much more committed. And it's the right thing to do. Naase, let us do this together. And let us create man. It's interesting that the way we communicate, I've mentioned this before, the way we communicate instructions are very, very, it's a very rude way, the way we instruct people. We instruct people the same way we would instruct a dog. There's no real difference. Do something. Maybe you'll say please. Very often one doesn't. But in black cultures they use this method. They'll never instruct that way. Then nobody will say, please do such and such. Even with a please, they won't do it. It will always be a nice, let's do it. And they know very clearly that if a senior person says to a junior person, let's do it, it doesn't mean that the senior person is going to get out on his hands and knees and do the work too. So he won't say, please clean the floor. He will say, come, please help me, let's clean the floor. And the junior person won't say, yeah, sure, I'll help you, come, you start. He understands that that's an instruction. That means he's got to do it. But the way he does it, that derech eretz, he understands that that's the way you talk to people. You don't talk to people with instructions. You talk to people with a nice odom, come, let's join in and do this together. And the person understands that's derech eretz. That indicates a kovod for the other person. That indicates a sense of dignity and value for the other human being. And it's perhaps that sense of human dignity, of what we call Kovod Habrius, which has totally disappeared from the scene of Western civilization. That's something that I spoke quite a lot about, and in Israel, as did my brothers, because that was one of the things that really typified what my parents really stood for and really fought for. And one of the things that pained them so much, to see to what extent this is disappearing in all our societies, as I was saying in shul this morning, in these areas, unfortunately, religious society is not far behind secular society in the slow chipping away at kovod habriyus, at human dignity. And one of the starting points of chipping away at human dignity is self-dignity. When people lose a sense of self-dignity, when the way people conduct themselves shows that they have no dignity, they don't really value themselves as human beings, they don't value themselves as special people, it becomes very difficult to value other people with that kind of dignity. My brother said at the hesped he gave for my mother, it was quite interesting, because in the years that my mother lived alone after my father died, he was the one who was there geographically closest to her. So he told the story how often he would pop into her flat, and she was about to have lunch, and the table would be set. And he said to me, "Do you remember how she used to set the table for a Friday night when we used to have a lot of guests?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "The table was set exactly the same way when she ate on her own. There was no difference. The silver was out, the cutlery was out, the crockery was out. Even though she was an old lady, he would then have to go and wash it all up herself. It wasn't out of paper cups and paper plates and anything like that. It was a tablecloth, there were flowers on the table. The table was set exactly the same way as if she was having a banquet. What does that show? That shows it's not just for other people I lay the table like that. Why am I any worse than other people? If that's how that I lay the table for my guests, do I value myself less than my guests? I don't value myself less than my guests. I'm also an important person. So why shouldn't I sit down and eat the same way as they would eat if I'd invited them to my table? You cannot have kovod habriyus if you don't have kovod atzmi. And when you see people today, and again, it pains one to say that there's not a great deal of difference between religious and secular society, when you see the lack of self-dignity with which people function, whether it's the way they eat, whether it's the way they dress, whether it's the way they speak to one another, when one sees that it is totally without that dignity, that's Derech Eretz. When we're talking about Derech Eretz, it's the valuing of the human being, every human being, including myself, as being a being worthy of enormous dignity. And if we don't give ourselves that dignity, how can we bring ourselves to give other people that kind of dignity? And that's one of the things we learn from the Rabbeinu Shlom. Na'aseh Odom, he consults with them. They're important beings. They don't have any say in the matter. It doesn't matter. But they're important human beings. Deal with them with COVID. They're important beings. Deal with them with COVID. And so it is that we have to deal with one another, whether they were junior, whether we're younger. It doesn't make any difference. There has to be a sense of COVID. There has to be a sense of honor and a sense of dignity in the way we deal. But the Ramban learns it very differently. Those of you who've got the Ramban on verse Chof Vav, I'm going to read it inside and translate it. Those of you who don't have it, it doesn't matter, just you'll pick it up very clearly from hearing. Vayomer Elokim Naase Odom, and Hashem said, "Let us make man." Nisyachid Ba'asiyas Ha'odom Maimar, man is singled out, quite apart from the creation of the rest of the animal world. Man is singled out, Ba'avur Goydel Ma'aloso, because of the greatness of his stature. So you see already the two interesting things is that the Ramban had a Havamina, he had an original assumption that it wasn't necessary to single man out. Why wasn't man included in the animal world? When it said, and God said, let there be living beings, domestic animals, wild animals, insects, if we're using the Darwinian system, then why shouldn't it have said, and man? Let there be insects, domestic animals, wild animals, and human beings. And later on it would have said, and God breathed life into the human beings and so on, but at least as far as the physical form is concerned, if we're all evolved from the same source. And by the Ramban's question, you see an acknowledgement on the part of the Ramban that physically we are animals. Darwin's quite right. No problem with that. And therefore we should have been able to be included. However, there is Godel Ma'alosai. There is a separate Ma'amar. It is dealt with separately because we have a stature and a status that no other animal has. And he'll explain it. Ki ein tivoi ketevo hachayo v'habehimo asher boro b'ma'amar hakudim lo. Because the nature of man differs from the nature of the animal dealt with in the previous statement. All of the animal kingdom on the one side has one nature, one psyche, and the human being on the other side has a different one. And this is the most important element of what Darwinism has done. The issue of Darwinism is not a question of how was the human being created. That's not the big issue. The issue of Darwinism is if one takes pure Darwinism, what one is acknowledging is that man is a further development of the animal and therefore is driven by the same basic drives as the animal. And yes, he has a few additional factors and he's more sophisticated and he can communicate and he's capable of all sorts of things, but it's just a matter of degree. He is a more sophisticated animal. And that puts him into the animal category, where the main difference between the animal and the human being is the human being's ability to take responsibility for his actions, whereas an animal can't, because an animal doesn't have free choice. And so taking Darwinism to its natural conclusion is the human being cannot be held responsible for his action. And that, together with other parallel theories that were developed at the same time and subsequently, are responsible primarily for the mess that the world is in that I was talking about this morning. The mess where human beings assume themselves to be animals. That's back to what I said a few moments ago, that we're not showing ourselves dignity. By eating like animals, we are giving credence to Darwinism. Now imagine for a moment, if I were to get up in a yeshiva and I would say, Darwin was right, we're all a bunch of animals. I would be hounded out, and quite rightly so. What would happen if I say, Darwin was wrong, we're holy people. We are created, we are the creations of Hashem. We have the neshama of Hashem. We have the power, the intellectual power and ability to understand the Torah. We are instruments of Hashem. We are little less than angels. And at the end of my shir, I go into the dining room and I eat like an animal. That'll be acceptable. That'll be okay. And in fact, what I'm suggesting is it should be the other way around. If I get up and I say, you know, Darwin's right, so what? I'm talking, so what? I'm talking rubbish. Who has to take it seriously? You don't have to hound me out. That's my view. Who cares? But to behave like an animal, that means I am giving total credence to Darwin. That means I'm saying the human being is an animal. And you see people, the way they walk around, and again, we're not terribly far behind the secular world, not very far behind. In fact, we're probably not far behind at all. We're not probably not behind at all. In the secular world, you have individuals who are very dignified, and you have a mass of individuals who are totally undignified. In the religious world, you have individuals who are incredibly dignified, and you have a mass of individuals who are not dignified. So I think what I'm saying is that it has nothing to do with religious or irreligious anymore. It's a little bit along the lines of what I said at our Shabbaton last year, that keeping kosher doesn't mean you're going to be healthy. Keeping the laws of family purity doesn't mean you're going to have a happy family. Being religious doesn't mean you're going to be honest. They have nothing to do with each other. You have people who keep the laws of family purity who have good marriages, and you have some who have bad marriages. You have people who don't keep the laws of family purity who have good marriages, and some who have bad marriages. You have people who are religious who are honest. You have people who are religious who are dishonest. You have people who are irreligious who are honest, and people who are irreligious and dishonest. No longer can one assume that being religious can be equated with being good or being great. That assumption is now gone. We've got to get beyond that. Because if we carry on with that assumption, we're going to be disillusioned over and over and over again. That used to be an okay assumption. Not so long ago, it used to be an okay assumption. It used to be an exception when a person, when a Ben Torah, when a religious person behaved in a way that was not noble. It was an exception. It happened, but it was an exception. It's not an exception today anymore. They're noble people and they're non-noble people in all spheres, and one has to be able to relate to people in terms of their nobility, not in terms of their religiosity, because the two have nothing to do with one another. Regrettably, it shouldn't be that way, but it is that way. And therefore, when one sees an individual, whether religious or irreligious, it makes no difference, behaving in an animalistic way, one is watching an affirmation of the principle of Darwinianism. And he's the guy who should be run out of town. So for example, I'm standing at the coming away from the Kosel and trying to get on a bus, and there had been a period of time in which there hadn't been a bus, so there was quite a lot of people, and it was about to start raining, and the bus arrived. There were old people there, there were women there, and there were a lot of young yeshiva people there. I won't tell you what happened. You can imagine. What I will tell you is that the young yeshiva people were not run out of town. But what does one look when one sees that? No difference to a lot of sheep. Imagine the sheep are there and there's some bolt of lightning and they all have to run. They stampeded in exactly the same way. Stampeded in exactly the same way. If you go to Cape Town, then you must go to the IMAX theater and you must see, there are a few things that are important to see there, but one of them is the one that the stampede of the wildebeest in the Serengeti Plains during the migration of the wildebeest. And when I watched that, I nearly became ill, because I just saw an egged bus and a whole lot of people running towards it. There was no difference. And that to me is a religious person saying, not only do I believe in Darwin, but I will prove to you that Darwin is right. Look at me, what a fine animal I am. Look at me, there's nothing human about me anymore. Yes, I learn in yeshiva, but there's nothing human about me anymore. I'm not a human being, I'm not a great human being. What's coming out is the animal in me. That's the Darwinianism. And when the Ramban says, man is separated here because he's not an animal, that's the issue. He's a Balmaila, he's got dignity. When a person eats in a fast food outlet, and you can't really tell the difference between him and your dog eating a bowl of Epon, there isn't really much of a difference. Maybe he says a brocha before, but that's got nothing to do with the dignity. Saying the brocha is a routine. That's not the question. The question is how he eats. The question is how he interrelates with other people while he eats. What he looks like while he's eating. Does he look like an animal, or does he look like a human being? That's the question. Does he look like something noble, or does he look like something ignoble? That's what's important to determine. And when one sees them and one watches that, one wonders. That's where the difference between man and animal needs to be understood and needs to be lived. And the Ramban goes on to say, "V'apshat hanochin b'milas naase," and the correct explanation of the word, "Let us make." What is the pluralism of it? Who is God talking to? Is because you've already understood, I've already explained to you. Ki ha'elokim baro yesh me'ayin b'yoyim harishoin levadei. Ramban says again something which, if anybody else would say, they would be run out of town, because it sounds like Darwin. He said, God created Abnielo, to create it from nothing, only on the first day. You remember we discussed that when we started the shiur. It was only on the first day that there was creation. And then he formed and evolved everything else out of those elements that were created on the first day. So on the first day he created some primary elements, and everything else was developed out of those elements, but there was no later creation. As it says, let the water produce life. Let the land produce life. But by man it says, doesn't say let the land produce man. It doesn't say let the water produce man. Man did not evolve. Omar ba'odom naaseh, we will make. Who's naaseh? Klomar, ani v'ha'oretz. There will be a partnership here. The land and me. There are two parts to man. There is one part that does evolve, the same as the rest of the creation, but there is another part of man that is created by me. And that's why it says, naaseh, you, earth, and earth doesn't just mean the soil. Earth means the elements. You, the world, just as you have evolved life until this point, you produced, out of the earth was produced the vegetation. Out of the earth was produced the sea life. Out of the earth was produced the animal life. So out of the earth will be produced one fact, one dimension of human life. And I will produce the other dimension. And naaseh, we will produce man as a combined effort. He will be a naturally evolved being produced by the universe, and he will be a super being produced by myself, and the two will be synthesized into one being, which is the being of Adam.
Shetotzi ha'oretz haguf miyesoideho ka'asher ososo bavehema uvachayo.
Listen to this carefully. That the earth will produce the human body from its elements in exactly the same way as the earth produced the animal. So the human body, says the Ramban, evolved in no different way to the animal body. Darwin is quite right. If you take away the spirituality of the human being, if you just look at the body and say, where does it come from? He's quite right. It's a further development of the animal body. That's all it is. Mufurish Ramban, hundreds of years before Darwin was born. There's no question about that. That's not an issue.
Kidichtiv, as it says, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es ha'odom ofor min ha'adomo.
God formed man out of the elements of the earth. But what we can't accept is that that's all man is. Because then,
Vayitein hu yisborach haruach mipi elyu. Hashem then provides the spirit from above. Kidichtiv, as it says, Vayipach bi'apav nishmas chayim.
That the Hashem gave a living force into man.
The Omar b'tzalmenu kidmusenu. And so why does it say, says the Ramban, in verse Chofov, and Hashem says, Na'aseh Adam, let us make Adam in our form and in our image. Who's us? The Naaseh, Rashi explained. He's talking to the angels. But when he says to make man in our form and in our image, who's us? Says the Ramban, who's us?
Ki yidme lishneim b'matkunos gufo la'oretz asher lukach mimeno v'yidme beruach le'elyonim she'ena gufo lo'itomus. It's the earth-God partnership. It's the nature-God partnership. That's the us. He will be created in the image, in our image. Whose image? Earthiness on the one hand and godliness on the other. We have the two images. As contrasting as they are, as opposite as they are, as conflicting as they are, we contain both those images. And that's the fascination of man. That's what makes us so fascinating. That's what makes us so intriguing. That's what makes us so full of conflict, so full of issues, so full of complexes, that produces the creative force in man and the negative forces, the destructive forces in man, all come from this conflict that we have Tzalmeinu Kidmuseinu. We have two images. There is one part of us that is a natural physical evolution where we are in fact sophisticated animals. That's our body. And we have another section which is completely different, which is a Chelek Eloiko Mimal, which is a part of God himself. And these two have been put together in a weird being that is the interface between the world of the spirit and the world of matter, the world of the physical material world in which we live.
The And that, says the Ramban further on, explains a very difficult medrash, where the medrash says, going back on Toitzei Ha'oretz, listen to this medrash, what a wonderful medrash. On verse 24, Vayomer Elokim Toitzei Ha'oretz, Hashem said, let the earth produce Nefesh Chayu Lemino, the living life according to its types, cattle, insects, and wild animals. On that posuk, says the Medrash Omer Rabbi Elozo, Nefesh Chayo, what is this living force? Zeruchoy Shel Odom Harishon, that is the spirit of Odom Harishon. How could you say such a thing? Odom Harishon is created in the next statement. Here we're creating animals. How can the Medrash say this is the spirit of Odom? Darwin knew the answer, and Darwin was right. It was in the creation of the animal that the origin of the human body was created. The human body is a sophisticated animal body. There's not much difference. That's what it is. But that's only one half of the story. The human being is made of another half altogether. And so we have to be very careful when we deal with the Darwinian question. As I said, the real issue is the morality of Darwinianism. And the result of Darwinianism from a moral point of view has been an attempt to interpret human behavior as, with the human being, as a function of forces that act upon him, the same as with animals. So you try and figure out why do people do what they did, and the psychologists start working out what forces have been acting on him that have brought him to this situation. How did his parents treat him? What society was he living in? What was the story with his siblings? What kind of pressures has he been under? That would all be valid if there wasn't the second maimor, if verse 26 didn't exist. If we were sophisticated animals who had developed an intellect, who developed a mind, an ability to communicate, and that was it, then just as the animal functions on the basis of external dynamics, if the animal moves, there's something causing it. And the thing that's causing it is probably something outside of the animal. He's moving because he's hungry. He's moving because he's hot. He's moving because he's cold. He's moving because his mate called him. He's moving because there's something that attracts his attention out there that he wants to go and get. But an animal is not capable of making an internal decision, not motivated by anything outside of himself, of I want to because I want to. That's it. I just want to. An animal can't do that. You can analyze any movement of an animal in terms of an outside dynamic. And the psychologists have tried to do the same with a human being. If you did something, there must be some dynamic that brought you to do it, and you've got to analyze what it is. Sometimes it's the rotzoin. That's part of the chelek elokim imal. Just as Hashem can say, I want, so the human being can say, I want. That's his free choice. And that I want is his responsibility. Its origin is within himself. It does not necessarily originate in anything outside of him. It might originate deep within his own soul, where he has made a choice and a decision that is not caused by the way his mother brought him up, or the way his father brought him up, or what happened with his siblings, or what happened during his life. It might have been caused by nothing at all except his own moral choice. He took a decision, he took a choice, and he needs to be able to take responsibility for that choice. The whole consequence of Darwinian thought has removed any sense of responsibility from human beings. And that's why we see the kind of behavior that we're seeing today, where people are doing things and acting in ways and living in ways that are totally irresponsible, because they haven't yet confronted the supremacy of their own choice, and therefore the supremacy of their own responsibility. And they haven't yet confronted the fact that they are not necessarily motivated by external forces, but have the ability to rise above those forces and to make choices that are different to those forces. We've talked before as to what the definition of free choice is. Free choice is not the power to do what you want. The power to do what you want, an animal has in a sense as well. Free choice is the power not to do what you want. Free choice is the power to say, I desperately feel like a cigarette. I normally smoke 40 cigarettes a day. I'm addicted to them. But I'm not going to have one. That's free choice. That the animal can't do. Free choice is to be able to say, I would love this piece of chocolate, but It just isn't healthy for me right now. So I'm not going to have it. Free choice is the ability to say, I would love to talk this piece of Lashon Hara. It's so juicy. I can hardly resist it. But I'm not going to. Free choice is to be able to say, I'm busy with something right now. The fact that somebody needs something from me, that's an interruption. I've got to finish what I'm doing. And free choice is the ability to say, but I won't. I'll do the chesed. That's more important. Free choice is the ability to interfere with the dynamics that are caused from outside forces and to make one's own choices that can override those outside forces. That's what the human being can do. It's not what the human being would be able to do if he only had the first part. If he only had this, if he wasn't created from that part of the Ribbono Shel Olam, he would be a sophisticated animal. And a sophisticated animal is driven by external dynamics. But the human being has the chelek elokim mimal, he has the godly part of him, which drives internally. If he were only the internal, if he were only the godly part, and he wouldn't have a body, he wouldn't be able to have any impact on the world.